Historical What Ifs. Historical What Ifs.
History hinges on moments so small they could fit in the palm of your hand, yet their consequences echo through centuries and shape the world we live in today. This is Historical What Ifs, where we explore the alternate timelines that could have emerged from a single different decision, a missed opportunity, or a stroke of luck that went the other way. Today's episode examines one of those pivotal moments and traces the extraordinary chain of events that might have followed if history had taken just one small turn in a different direction. Welcome to Historical What Ifs, reimagining pivotal moments, Historical What Ifs.
Today we are tackling a question that feels monumental, almost unthinkable. What happens when a figure who defines the identity of billions simply isn't there?
It's a question that's always fascinated me, not just as a storyteller, but because of the sheer weight of it. We're talking about a narrative that is so deeply embedded in our collective consciousness. The story of Moses. For me, the interest comes from that fundamental question: can a people, a culture, a faith even exist without its founding story?
Exactly. And for me, it's the domino effect. I grew up hearing these stories, and they were always presented as the beginning of everything. The origin of law, of a nation, of a covenant. To even consider a world where that entire chain of events is broken at the first link, it's a staggering thought experiment.
It really is. So, what if the bulrushes were empty? What if there was no burning bush on Mount Horeb, no plagues visited upon Egypt, no parting of the Red Sea?
What if the man who received the Ten Commandments, the lawgiver who forged a nation in the desert, never existed or never fulfilled that biblical role?
That is the timeline we're stepping into today. We're not just removing a prophet, we're removing a pillar of history. The implications, as we're about to explore, ripple through everything, from the ancient world to the modern geopolitical landscape.
It's a world-altering scenario, and I genuinely don't know where it will lead us. Let's find out.
So, the first, most immediate question has to be, what happens to the Hebrews in Egypt? Without a catalyst, without a leader to crystallize their discontent, what is their fate?
That's the ground zero of this entire scenario. My mind immediately goes to fractured resistance. You know, you wouldn't have a single unified movement. You'd have, maybe, small, desperate uprisings. A foreman killed here, a granary burned there. But these would be brutally and efficiently crushed by the Egyptian machine.
Oh, without a doubt. We're talking about the new kingdom at the height of its power. A scattered slave revolt, without a central charismatic leader, and crucially, without a unifying narrative of divine intervention, is barely a footnote in their history. It's a security problem, not an existential threat.
Exactly. No plagues to soften them up. No awe-inspiring miracles. Just anger and desperation. And the Egyptian response would be to clamp down. Harder. Any sense of a unique cultural identity among the Hebrew slaves would likely be systematically dismantled. Punished.
So, assimilation through force becomes a real possibility, or even annihilation. Their identity, which in the original timeline is forged in the crucible of the Exodus, is instead eroded. They risk becoming just another absorbed population, their stories and their god fading into the Egyptian pantheon, perhaps as a minor, subservient deity.
And that's the first great domino. The absence of Moses isn't just the absence of a leader. It's the absence of the story. The story of a people chosen by a powerful, singular God who intervenes in history on their behalf. Without that, what is their identity? They're just slaves.
It completely changes their psychology. And this leads to the next critical point, Sinai. Let's imagine for a moment that some group does manage to escape. Maybe a smaller, desperate band breaks free during a period of Egyptian instability.
A jailbreak, not an exodus.
Precisely. They get out into the desert. Now what? Who are they? They don't have Moses. They don't have the encounter at the burning bush. They don't have the promise. And most importantly, they don't have the law.
No Ten Commandments. No covenant. Think about what that means. The entire ethical and legal foundation that becomes the bedrock of Judaism, and later influences Christianity and Islam, is just gone.
What do they have instead? They would be a collection of tribal customs, certainly, but without that centralizing divine authority. They'd likely splinter. They'd wander into the desert and contend with the Midianites, the Amalekites, all the other groups there, not as a unified nation with a divine mission, but as just another struggling tribe.
And probably a tribe that gets absorbed or conquered very, very quickly. You see how fundamental this is? The law given to Moses wasn't just a set of rules. It was a constitution for a new nation. It was the software for a society. Without it, the hardware, the people themselves, can't function as a cohesive whole.
So you're suggesting the very concept of Israel as a unified people, a nation bound by covenant to a single God, might not even form?
It might be impossible. That idea, that radical monotheism that set them apart from every single one of their neighbors. Where does its authority come from without the Sinai event? Without the awe and terror of that moment? It could easily have remained a fringe belief, the cult of a minor desert god, rather than the world-changing force it became.
And let's pull on that thread of authority. Because it's not just religious authority, is it? It's political, it's military. A fringe cult of a desert god doesn't forge a kingdom that can stand up to the Philistines on the coast, let alone the great empires rising in Mesopotamia.
Not even close. The entire geopolitical map of the Levant just dissolves. Without a unified Israelite kingdom emerging, what do you have? You have a collection of Canaanite city-states, perpetually warring with each other. A power vacuum.
A power vacuum that Egypt or the Hittites or later the Assyrians would be more than happy to fill. Canaan would likely remain what it had been for centuries, a colonial territory, a land bridge to be fought over and taxed, not the home of a unique world-shaping civilization.
Exactly. And think about the ripple effect on those other empires. For Assyria, their western expansion becomes, well, easier. There's no stubborn, rebellious kingdom of Judah or Israel sitting in the hill country, allied with Egypt one minute and Damascus the next.
There's no siege of Jerusalem by Sennacherib to become this legendary story of divine deliverance. It's just a Tuesday. Another provincial capital is brought to heel. The entire narrative of a small nation defying an empire because of their faith, it never gets written.
But does that change the empires themselves? I mean, this is something I've wondered about. The Israelites, for all their faults, presented a profound ideological challenge to the ancient world order. Their god wasn't like Marduk or Ashur. He wasn't the divine patron of a city or an empire.
Oh, that's an interesting question. You're saying that the constant friction with this stubborn, monotheistic idea actually influenced the Assyrians or Babylonians?
I think it had to. The concept of a single, universal God who judges all nations, including the great empires, it's philosophically radioactive in that world. It introduces a standard of justice that exists outside the will of the king or the might of the army. Without that idea being championed by a nation in the heart of their empires, what does their own theology look like?
So the concept of universal morality, of a higher law that even an emperor must answer to, might not develop in the same way. The law is simply what the powerful say it is. It's Hammurabi's code, not the Ten Commandments.
Precisely. Hammurabi's code is fundamentally transactional. It's a great innovation, don't get me wrong. But it's about regulating a state. The Mosaic Law, especially the Decalogue, is about defining a relationship between humanity and the divine, and between humans themselves on a moral plane.
And it's portable. That's the other thing. When Babylon destroys Jerusalem in our timeline, the people can take their law and their God with them into exile. The faith survives the state. But if your God is tied to a statue in a temple in a city that's just been leveled,
you have nothing. Your God has been defeated. That's the end of your story. The idea of a faith that can survive national catastrophe, the very seed of what becomes rabbinic Judaism, and by extension, the models for Christianity and Islam, that seed is never planted. It dies in the dust with the Canaanite city-states.
Wow, that is a staggering thought. The idea that a faith becomes portable, that it can survive the death of a nation-state, that's a genuinely radical innovation in human history. And without Moses, you're saying it doesn't happen.
It dies on the vine. And if that innovation dies, let's take the next logical, terrifying step. What happens to the faiths that were built directly upon that foundation?
Well, there it is. Let's just state it plainly. Without Judaism as we know it, there is no Christianity.
None. The entire narrative collapses.
Think about it. There's no Old Testament, no prophetic tradition for Jesus to fulfill. The very concept of a Messiah, a savior for the people of Israel, it has no context. He's not the Lion of Judah, because there is no tribe of Judah with that specific covenantal promise.
So, what is he? He becomes a Galilean wisdom teacher, a local healer, maybe one of a dozen charismatic, apocalyptic preachers wandering the Levant at the time, which was a Roman province filled with them. His story is completely untethered from the epic that gave it universal meaning.
He's a footnote, not a turning point in history. And without that Jewish framework, the Apostle Paul, what is his mission? The entire intellectual project of early Christianity, reconciling the Jewish law with this new covenant, it's a solution to a problem that doesn't exist.
And then, the third pillar, Islam. It's almost unthinkable. The Quran is in constant dialogue with the Mosaic tradition. Musa, Moses, is one of the most revered prophets. The entire idea of Muhammad as the final prophet in a long line stretching back through Jesus to Moses and Abraham, that chain is broken at the source.
The religious landscape of 7th century Arabia remains what it was, a tapestry of local polytheistic beliefs, with some scattered Christian and Zoroastrian influences. The Kaaba in Mecca doesn't get rededicated to the one God of Abraham, because that specific, potent idea of Abraham's God never consolidated in the way that it did.
It's a world without its central, organizing, monotheistic narrative. It's almost impossible to picture. The entire moral and ethical language that has shaped, well, everything, for 2 millennia, is just absent.
You know, looking back on our whole discussion, the thing that strikes me most isn't just the absence of these religions. It's the absence of the type of story the Exodus represents. A story of liberation against impossible odds, of divine law standing above the law of kings, of a covenant that binds a people together. That narrative has been the blueprint for so many political and social movements, completely outside of religion.
That's true. But I also find myself wondering, and this is a darker thought, would a world without that intense covenant-driven monotheism be a less violent one? So much of history has been defined by the clash of these universal truths. Without them, do you just have the regular brutal politics of empire, without the added fire of religious certainty? I don't know the answer, but the question is unsettling.
It really is. You removed one man from the bulrushes, and you might have just removed the very idea of the West, the concept of universal human rights that grew out of that ethical tradition, and the foundational stories that give meaning to billions.
It changes the shape of the human soul. What an incredible and frankly terrifying thing to contemplate. The butterfly effect of history reminds us that the world we know today is just one of countless possibilities, shaped by moments of chance, choice, and consequence that could have easily gone another way. This has been Historical What Ifs. where every episode reveals how fragile our timeline really is, and how different decisions by our ancestors might have created an entirely different present. Understanding these alternate possibilities doesn't just satisfy our curiosity. It helps us appreciate how remarkable it is that we ended up in this particular version of history.